From the shadow of Sentinel Peak, inside the Star Pass through the Tucson Mountains, at the edge of the Sonoran Desert, this is the Highlands Bunker Podcast.
Love it.
There you go. Yeah, so thanks, guys, for figuring out the best way to do this. I think it'll work okay. The crew is here. I'm sitting in a rather nice hotel room in a resort in the desert in Tucson, attending the NACOL conference, the National Association for Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement, because we're going to oversight you motherfuckers. Of course, the crew is supporting me back inside the studio, Bill and Carl. Thanks, man.
Good evening, Rob. Just to paint a picture for what it's like here back in Delaware, I was driving here, Union Street, kind of near Stapler Park a few minutes ago, and who did I see but John Paul Mac Apple Store in full Apple Store or Mac Store garb, carrying a bag or something, and I was like, I got a feeling tonight's going to be a good night. Tonight's going to be a good night. So it's a pleasure.
I cannot get that guy out of my life, you know. They finally, I guess, dropped all of the lawsuits last week.
I saw that, yeah.
It's funny because, it was being heard by a judge in Georgetown, I think. And they were like, I've had enough of this. And I thought to myself, I got to live in the same neighborhood as this guy.
So enough about this guy, John. How's NACOL?
NACOL is actually pretty cool. And I'm sure you especially, sort of in a professional aspect of it, probably get this a lot too. When you go to like a professional conference of like all of the people in the country that are doing some like similar stuff to what you're doing, mm-hmm. and you find out just how backwards and backwater and podunk Delaware is, how like you know it's actually. It's actually kind of funny if it wasn't for the fact that it like affects everything, it's been pretty interesting because we're trying to start up this issue campaign, and I wanna be able to feel like we set we make our own priorities and set high goals. You know, I don't want to go and nibble around. I know that's what people, you know, that's the sort of the Delaware way. You know, they want to figure out, you know, the least impact three things and do those three things. Mm-hmm. So I'm just happy to hear some people talk that are doing it in other places. And they're like also exposing like a lot of the people who have come out from the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board, expose them to it too. I mean, they already kind of know what they're doing because they're pretty good, but It's just good to bring this information back to a state that's, you know, pretty backwards.
Yeah, or at least like kind of reactive. So like, for example, with one of the three things you suggested, is that like my idea to provide ex-felons with greater access to higher quality toiletries? Like, is that the you're right. That's like something we'd be advocating for here in Delaware.
That would be a Delaware. Yeah. It would be like, but only if you're going to live inside an economic development zone.
Okay.
And you also have to have had a Pell Grant, and then you can get actually discounted toiletries at a sliding scale. Classic Delaware move. On one hand, we're somewhat lucky because there are some states, and a gentleman at the big board meeting this morning sort of mentioned it. There were police accountability boards and oversight boards in Florida, and because the state is just, you know, on another planet, they just dissolved them all by governor edict maybe or something. So they're no longer like even in the group. People were sort of lamenting that, and it's not a great story. So, you know, we have something to work with, which is good, I guess. But the people that we're working with, I don't know. You know, it's just they don't have that. There's something about Delaware, or maybe it's about politics and Delaware together, and it's maybe the size of the state that just makes it seem like, I don't know, we're not sending our best to make these decisions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels that way. But I mean, they've sent you out to Nicole, so that's a good start.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And the thing is, I think I'm very excited about the issue campaign. We're going to be talking more about it in the future, in the next couple of weeks, probably. But yeah, it's going to be independent. It's going to be community driven. I already had a couple of meetings with, you know, some people who are going to be involved with it. Christina Kelly, Jordan Pusey, Keandra McDowell, Lakeisha Nix, Cheyenne Miller. You probably know some of these people, and they're serious about doing this work, and they're sort of happy that we're going in a new direction, and we're setting our goals very, very high. And so, yeah, this is like the perfect time for me to be out here and just sort of like listening and sort of absorbing some stuff that, you know, I read about it because I do a lot of, you know, research for the job, but to actually sort of see the folks who are doing it and have them explain and have them take questions about it is really, really helpful and productive for me.
Sweet. How have you been presenting the advocacy group, name first, acronym first? Have you been getting a reaction to no cap?
So yeah, that's a great question. So
Thanks.
the issue campaign is going to be called Neighbors Organized Organizing for Credibility and Accountability in Policing. So it's No Cap Delaware. And I knew it was like I knew either people were going to enjoy it because of it's clever or hate it for the same reason. Like it's like too clever. But for the most part, I've got a lot almost all good feedback about it. You know, there were people I knew who were going to like it, and then there were other people who I weren't sure. But even them, I think I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned it on here or just to people sort of privately, but I gave the presentation in person to you know, groups of volunteers at Sam Church a couple of weeks, a week or two ago. And after I gave the presentation, I sat down and I was sitting next to Kevin O'Connell from ODS, and I sit down. And Kevin leans over as the next person's going up, and he goes, "No cap, I love that." So, you know,
Approved.
if he's on board and everybody else is on board, I think we're sticking with no cap.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, next week, you know, the people I've talked to whose names I mentioned are going to be part of sort of a planning committee. And they're going to also support the work we have to do to get up to the point where we can start actually, you know, reaching out to, you know, create documents, to do actions, to do comms, to do all of that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a lot of sort of admin work and discussions for the next couple of months. And so they're going to help support all of that, especially Christina and Jordan. But, you know, we have, you know, 50 plus people on a list of committed sort of working group members that are immediately going to be part of this, and they're going to start bringing more and more people in. So we're going to be able to have sort of workshops and sessions to talk about, you know, how high, you know, what goals do we want to set? What do we think we can do? And you know, how are we going to communicate it? How are we going to message it? How are we going to sort of engage the community about it, and how are we going to engage decision makers about it? So the next couple of months is going to be really cool, and I can't wait to bring more people in to start talking about it.
Sweet. I'm excited for you and everyone involved. It feels like a natural evolution of this sort of this vague, not so vague project that you've been talking about. I just think it's great. It's I love following along.
Yeah, and I'm just you know I was so glad that everybody that I contacted and that I you know whose names I listed and a few people that are going to be supporting who you know I'm not going to mention yet, but everybody's been really not only supportive but sort of excited about it, and so yeah I'm excited. And then just today, I guess it was today, I'm kind of you wouldn't think 3 hours difference is that much, but I'm sort of losing track of what's going on back home. There was a story in WHYY about like increased transparency in Delaware, because it's, again, it kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, like it's so bad. You almost can't believe how bad Delaware is for like transparency and inside dealing. A lot of it's for peanuts, so people don't like, somebody embezzles $113,000 and you're like, what was the point of it? But yeah, there was a story in WHYY, and Meyer is quoted about police transparency, and his quote gave me a lot of like, I don't want to say hope, but I know we're going to have somebody who's going to listen to what we're going to say. It's not going to be an obstinate little blockhead baby like the Delaware way has been. John Carney, Pete Schwarzkopf, Val Longhurst, all gone. So yeah, I'm kind of excited that these things are kind of coming together at the same time. I'm sort of building my own knowledge base up. I'm getting people on board with the project, and then stepping into the mix, January, February of next year. We could really shake some stuff loose, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, like you said, like potentially a more hospitable environment for these kinds of conversations happening. I don't know if they were happening really in plain view before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to have to sit through 2 years of Franklin Cook fucking task force meetings.
Right, right,
We're
right.
done with that. That's over. That's done. And I hope people start to get on board with that program. And I think they kind of are. The song and dance of what they passed. And I'm so glad, and I wish I could remember the reporter's name who wrote the story for WHYY, but she was very good at even framing the problem, that the original LeoBoer reform was watered down. This was Tizzy Lachman's bill, was watered down to the point of, really getting not really what you wanted, or anything that anybody was too happy with. Some people, nobody was really happy. Some people just settled for it and got yelled at, and some people knew that it was bullshit and just backed away. I don't think we're gonna have to. I'm glad it's still. That story is still being told. Like, that's the context of it. And the people like John Carney, who would be like, oh, we gave you something 3 years ago, fuck off, they're gone. And so the story is being told in the right way, and it's given us all an opening, like an opportunity to actually make a change that could impact something, rather than just making a change that, yeah, I'm glad the police accountability boards are there, for example. And I'm glad that they gave us a tool, but it's like a toothbrush to clean the floor of an airport bathroom. It's like, it's not enough. We need more.
Speaking of I guess articles from back home, did you catch what's his name? Dempsey Waters sentencing? I believe Lex wrote about it for the news journal. It was
I
interesting.
did, and I wanted to make a one big comment on it too.
Yeah, go for it.
So just to catch everybody up, this is the state trooper who tracked down like a teenager who did a ding dong ditch, you knock on the door and run away thing, and to like literally kick the shit out of him, beat him up pretty bad, beat up a couple kids, I think a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old in the pursuit of vengeance, I guess. He was sentenced to prison time, which is good. It was a nice easy layup for our friend Dan McBride, which
Yeah, this
is
is 2 weeks in
good.
a row, right?
Yeah, let's just look. He's look. I say a lot, I talk a lot of shit, but these I mean, when you have it on video, the guy like beating up a handcuffed teenager, it's like, come on, Dan, lay it in the basket. Let's go.
Yeah, and just to like color in a couple more details, it like the officer did, beat the shit out of two teenagers, but also like unleashed multiple departments worth of resources, including police dogs, helicopters, I believe, and long guns, whatever they are. I know what they are, but I always think it's I feel like since 2020, the just like that phrase pops up in articles more and more. But yeah, so yeah, I just wanted to color in some of the background of the incident.
Yeah, they call them long guns now because when they were ARs, it was like people call them assault rifles, and they're like, they're not assault rifles, it's Armalite. No, like, no, AR stands for assault, you know. And then everybody would troll like the gun heads,
Yep.
and
No,
so
it
now they
stands
just
for assault rifle.
everybody knows that.
Shut up. There's
So I
15 of
think they
them.
just that's when it was the newest model was made in 2015.
That's
Everybody knows
right.
that.
I
God, I don't know. Like, if you don't know about this stuff, I don't know why you're talking about it.
don't know why you own guns, dude.
You don't even know what you have. Yeah, I forgot the fact that somehow he got the helicopter out. I also, so there's a phone call or a text message or something, because I guess his wife or his girlfriend was home, and that call or that message, just made it clear that kids just ding dong ditched. Like, there was no, like, that's what happened. But he told the story like there was a home invasion, which he knew that there wasn't from the phone call before. And then he kind of knew, I guess, the group of kids. So he went to the, I guess, you know, the state database to look it all up and go to these homes and start menacing these kids. So yeah, he got. And yeah, I'm glad something happened, you know. I think I was a little, you know, it's funny, it was Delaware state cop, and they're supposed to be like the upper echelon, you know. You have to have a college degree and you do all this sort of different training, and I'm like, there's much messed up beef heads anyway. It's sick.
Yeah, and there's a funny detail as well involving body cameras. I think like one of the and I it's not really funny at it's not funny at all because these two kids have, I believe, permanent like physical injuries now as a result of this like maniac beating them.
Oh, it was the body cam thing, the
Oh,
one
that
where he
body
turned the
cam.
thing off, but
Right, yeah, he
it keeps
turned it off,
running
but
for 30 seconds.
the technology keeps it on for 30 seconds. Wonderful.
So, yeah, how about that? And the people who make those are here at this conference too to Axum or whatever. So I was like, hey, that's a nice feature. Way to go.
Shout out.
And the cops know that though. I'm surprised they didn't like, oh, count to 30 and then beat the guy up. Like, come on, buddy. The other detail from the story, both the detail in the incident, but something in the story. So Lex got they got a co-bind line with Esteban Parra, and you read the story, and you get to like sort of like the defense, and of course the defense is this state cop was in the brigade of people trying to chase this guy from Ellesmere down 95 and shoot that guy a couple years ago. And so he had PTSD from that. That's the story. Now
Yeah,
it's
because he
funny
fell
because
down, right?
he fell down, right? He was running and fell down, and he thought because he fell down he was gonna die. And yeah, so there you go. But the funny thing is, the woman who got beat up in the Royal Farms parking lot in Bear, at her press conference at the Eadway firm, talked about her PTSD, that she had a panic attack and yelled. And Esteban called like a psychology professor to comment on that and whether PTSD would excuse, you know, yelling or something. And he puts that in there, like, oh, I talked to Professor so and so, and she's an expert, and she said this is stupid. Now, in this story that was probably written by Lex pretty much, because his was the only name at the end of it, it says something like, you know, there's no indication that PTSD is a defense for any of this, you know, and kind of does comment on the fact that the officer used this excuse. And I'm like, I wonder if Esteban is looking at that like, oh yeah, maybe the black woman who got her ass beat, I shouldn't have really done what I did in the paper, and be more like Lex, maybe, you know, give us the context that's real, and not that, you know, don't try to Again, I knew what he did from the beginning. He saw comments on the original story when the video went viral, and the back to blue types are going to be like, "Oh, why didn't you just like lay down?" We've talked about all of this stuff, and so this is what he did, and Lex did something completely different with this PTSD excuse because of the and with the roles were reversed, and Esteban had a, I mean, I guess it's still up there. He had a co-byline, and I found that very funny.
Yeah, so what I'm gonna say next, this is like real Highlands Bunker hours. This is like something I would normally just text you on Signal, Rob. But so I believe that article was published yesterday afternoon. May have just been Esteban Parra's byline at first, but I think Lex was added to it shortly thereafter. And over like the past 24 hours, I keep seeing the article get updated like every 3, 4 hours. And it seems to be getting better, or at least kind of fleshed out a bit more. I think there was some like helpful quotes from family members of the victims. But it's if you were here and we had more time on our hands, I think I would be like coaxing you into tech, or yeah, like reaching out to Lex and be like, what's the scoop here? Are you guys fighting? What's getting published? Like, I'm always just fascinated by like when the articles get updated and they either omit things, they correct things, so you know what I'm talking about, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I think we're gonna have to reach out to some people on this one, figure out what the hell is going on. But yeah, I just when I saw that PTSD, I was like, oh, come on. Okay, Bill, do you have a rating series?
I do. I've got sort of like a I was thinking of like a recent local interest law enforcement character maybe a week or two ago and came across this article. It's based on a longer piece by ProPublica, but this one is from the Riverfront Times, which is, I think, Rob, we used to call these alternative weeklies. This is a St. Louis, Missouri-based one that, unfortunately, since this article was written in March of this year, it seems to have been sold to like a company with unnamed investors. Probably not. I don't know. If you look at like the front page of Riverfront Times right now, it's pretty bleak. But it did seem. I looked at their Wikipedia entry earlier today. It seemed like a pretty legit like alt weekly. Like that Texas paper that Jake Owens and you guys were talking about. Tribune, right, which is a great publication. All right, so Riverfront Times, March 4th, 2024. Police Chief Robert Tracy's blog will put you to sleep, but it does help earn him an extra $100,000 a year, by Ryan Krull. Perez Hilton, Emily Gold, Ray Hartman, St. Louis Police Chief Robert Tracy. What do they have in common? They're all bloggers, of course. You would be forgiven if you didn't know Tracy, who was appointed chief in January 2023 as a blogger. But 2 weeks ago, ProPublica's Jeremy Kohler published a deep dive into Tracy's compensation as police chief, which, in addition to $175,000 in salary from the city, includes an additional $100,000 from a nonprofit run by local business leaders. As Kohler reported, that 100K comes with a few strings attached, one of which is that Tracy provides regular updates to the community by a blog or other means. That's the quote from the contract, I believe. So we got to wondering, where is this blog? What sort of tea is he spilling on it? To take a second question first, as Tracy himself might in a press conference, the answer is not much tea at all. After reviewing several of the chief's posts, we're sad to say the writing is exactly as exciting as you'd expect of a blog written to fulfill a contractual obligation between the head of a major metropolitan police department and a group of businessmen footing a chunk of his salary. In his initial post last August, Tracy wrote that the purpose of the blog is to let us know what's going on at the SLMPD, analyze crime trends, and, quote, share a brief story or stories, end quote. But we can find nary a story in the 7 blog posts thus far, not a yarn, spiel, or rigmarole. There is definitely no tea, no gossip, and certainly no innuendo, not even any low-level dish. Obviously, Tracy isn't going to write about his officers running over a church sign and then trying to cover it up, or crashing into a gay bar and then arresting its owner. But last week, SLMPD officers uncovered an alleged cult, rescued a kidnapped woman, and collared a car thief who stole a Dodge Charger in Jefferson City and ran amok in Illinois before getting busted by the police in front of Busch Stadium. All of that happened in just one day. Surely Tracy can spin up a few good yarns every month. The blog is part of an unusual pay arrangement the chief has with the city, one that presents all sorts of questions about who the chief is ultimately answering to. The ProPublica story quoted Ward 12 Alderwoman Sharon Tyus raising concerns about the situation. Quote, "Who else can pay the chief?" She was quoted as saying, "Can the criminals get together and pay the chief too?" If you ask us, that's the exact sort of combative, quippy energy Tracy should be putting into his online writing. As for where to find the blog, that's the most interesting thing about it. The department's social media accounts do make exactly one perfunctory post promoting each edition of the blog. But if you miss those, it's otherwise incredibly hard to find. While it's technically hosted on the SLMPD's website, it's not available in any menu, much less linked on the homepage. Regular Googling is of little help, too. Poking around those search results, we stumbled on former police chief Dan Isom's blog from 2012 before we found Tracy's. If you're trying to Google your way to Tracy's monthly missives, you need to search Commissioner's Correspondence, which is the name of the blog. Though, of course, you would only know to Google that if you had already discovered the blog. Maybe there's an easier way. But if there is, we haven't found it. We reached out to someone who builds websites for a living and asked him if there's a technical term for a page of a website that isn't linked to anywhere on the website and is only available via the direct link or a very specific Google search. The reply we got, "I think the industry term is fucked. No, LOL, I've never heard of that." This is a true alt weekly.
I cannot. Yeah, they can use fuck. Yeah.
All right. As just a quick addendum, the author wrote, "After a lengthy back and forth with a City Hall spokesperson, we've determined that a link to the commissioner's correspondence does show up on the police homepage for some, but not all, Chrome users and few, if any, Safari users. We've not checked Edge, Explorer, or Firefox yet. The blog does seem easier to spot on the homepage mobile edition. We still contend that no matter where you find it, it could be a lot more exciting. As for the police department website, communications director Connor Kerrigan says, SLMPD is almost done building their new website. I've seen the new design. It's focused on accessibility and transparency and is obviously overdue." So Robert Tracy, so the ProPublica article gets into the salary implications and the, you know, contracting with the local, like local wealthy merchants to keep, you know, certain parts of the city safe. That's, I think, more interesting to me and maybe worth a deeper dive someday. But the commissioner's correspondence, it's an archive of 14 like PDF pages, essentially, like just like a missive typed up in Microsoft Word, print to PDF, and then posted on the web. It's pretty great. And I guess you do one a month, you get 100K a year. Not bad.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, I guess it's legal. Is that, I have no idea. The only thing I was kind of, I wasn't shocked originally because I don't know if you guys remember, but when Przycki wanted to bring Tracy to Wilmington, he had to go and push through the city council to raise the top tier of pay for him. Yeah. So, I mean, he's just out there getting that bread. Yeah. And, you know, he's a despicable human being. If you guys want to have a lot of fun with Google, Google his name and Laquan McDonald in Chicago. Mm-hmm. and check that out. Laquan McDonald, his name was mentioned, at the conference. I sat in on a session with COPA, which is the Citizens Oversight Board in Chicago, which is actually a city department that's funded, that has investigators, has, you know, all kinds of sort of mental health resources, has all kinds of stuff. They publish they put out press releases. This is a great thing. But yeah, I mean, Tracy's not a good dude. And yeah, I mean, just what does that look like? It's just like, you know, the wealthy business owners come together and are like, okay, we'll give you, you know, we'll give you another 100 grand to do nothing, just to come here and do our bidding, I guess. Because, you know, they're not getting anything out of, it's just like what they used to do with like college football players. It's like, if you just jump over that thing, we'll just give you $1,000. It's just like, make work sort of thing to be able to funnel money to somebody. It's even media stuff too. I mean, if you look at,
Yeah, like radio
I don't
shows
know if
or.
you guys are familiar, you guys, yeah, if you guys are familiar with the old Nick Nolte basketball film Blue Chips, where
Blue
they run a
chip.
real crooked, they run a real crooked basketball university, big time basketball team. And there's a lot of like famous basketball players in it, so it's kind of cool. But like he has to do a once a week like radio and TV show, like talk to coach whatever, and that's like part of his extra money, so he has to do it. So there's this thing like, I gotta go do this, but I don't want to do it, that kind of thing. And it's just like, okay, it's one thing when you're just like a college head coach, like a college football coach or something, like you're it doesn't like what you do doesn't really matter. There's the ramifications of you being good or bad or taking money from the alumni association or whatever. Like, I mean, it's not good, but there's no what's the consequences? It certainly has nothing to do with like policing the city of St. Louis.
The other kind of cool wrinkle here is this same group that funds the secondary salary for the police chief also contracts, I believe, with like police St. Louis law enforcement officers to provide like off the clock, but like overtime, public safety work, like specific to like downtown areas. They just called it secondary. Like it was like a term that like everyone knows. It's like, yeah, the police, a lot of policemen here do secondary. And I thought that was kind of grim, kind of weird to be funded,
Now,
not just like,
are they doing like private security? Are they like on the
yeah, that's
beat? Does it
kind of what
say
it,
like what they're
yeah,
doing?
it's kind of like, well, like we've got some private security downtown here. It sounded like it's like very much so a gray area where like, are they private security for this? Particular, are they for the city that they're employed by, or this like quote unquote nonprofit that's paying for tonight? It's pretty fucked.
Goddamn Robert Tracy. We're never going to get rid of these people. Did you see? I don't know if you saw, there was one other sort of tidbit on the on the my journalism critiquing my journalism friends. Carl Baker wrote a story in Spotlight. Did you see this?
Yeah, actually it might be helpful for this might be more up Carl's alley. But yeah, this was about a Mike Bloomberg
It is why I wrote the article.
PAC donation, Rob. Is this the one you're referencing?
Yeah, so there's a PAC. I forget the name of it. It's just, it's a fucking PAC. And Mike Bloomberg throws a bunch of dough in there, $250,000, to funnel to the Meyer campaign so that Meyer, and I don't know how they track this stuff. Like, they know money's fungible. I never know what they use.
Oh, I know how. I think they get on a Bloomberg terminal and they just ask for it. They get on the terminal.
You gotta have the licensing though. That's for the terminal.
That's true.
So and then he used that the campaign used that money to then like really like throw all kinds of stuff about Bethany's scandals. And I think what Carl said last time we talked about it is like, and it worked. Yeah, and that's just that is what it is. I mean, whatever. But Carl in the thing used the word rescued the pack. To send this money over to make it sound like, well, first it made it kind of sound like they rescued Meyer, which I'm like, he was up in the polls. Bethany was tanking because of all of this stuff. I don't know, did you pull him from a burning building? And then he said, well, I used the word rescue because the PAC didn't have a lot of money. It was like $30,000, and then it had 250 for this thing. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't the balance in the PAC's account does not indicate like anything. This is my problem with all these fucking I don't know, these journalists love to like see something and be like, well, the fact is that this pack had 30 grand, 30 grand, 30 grand a month, and then got this influx of cash. It's just a vehicle to use to funnel this money in an elite, to skirt election laws to get this amount of money to this campaign. Like the idea that it has any that the balance it has is any indicative of it's like it's almost dead or not dead. It has to be pulled out of the, it's drowning and it has to be pulled out. It's just a vehicle to use to move money. Like it wasn't dying, nothing got rescued. It's like I don't get it. Like you can just create them. Like if you can just fill out some paperwork to create an entity, like just create another one. There's just no rescuing of them. It was just a weird word. And he explained it a little bit more, and I still disagreed. And it's just this weird framing that people use. Another one, I'll let Carl comment, but this is the other thing, and I see it all the time now because we're kind of in this. We're in this election, you know, from the primary. Now we got the general coming up. So every story has like, well, in this district, you know, Republicans, you know, are out. There's this many registered Republicans, this many registered Democrats across the state. There's this many, and this that number, the number of registered anythings is basically useless in a news story. Like we're in a closed primary state. So you have to be registered something to vote in a primary if you want to vote. A lot of people either really believe for good reasons, or they just don't. You're one of those people, oh, they're both bad or whatever, and they just are independent or whatever. So like the idea that counting the number of registered somethings gives you any context at all, I think is everybody is so stupid. This was the thing in the Katz, the Michael Katz article too, that I got into it with Chris Barrish about. I'm like, you make it sound like that's telling me something, and it's really not. So anyway, Carl, do you have any sort of expert input or even just feeling about this PAC situation? And the Meyer campaign.
Rob, just really quick, I just want to say for the record, Carl just now picked up the Mike Katz business card that I left over the weekend at your place that was left on my car's dashboard at the University of Delaware football game last weekend. So just wanted to bring that moment full circle.
Well, I want to talk about that. We'll talk about that after Carl opines on this.
Yeah, I think as normal, I'm going to disagree with you on both of your points. So one is.
You think like that re registration thing is like it's.
I mean, I think registration is like, obviously, especially I think it's better in Newcastle County, but in Sussex it gets more useless because you get a lot of Dixiecrats that they registered to vote for like George Wallace in 1972 and they haven't changed it since. But I would say if you're looking for one number to determine how Democratic or Republican a district is, the registration is probably like number two or three. I think the most obvious, if you want to get a sense of how actually Democratic or how actually Republican a district is, just look at the previous presidential results. So if I saw, oh, in RD22, Mike Smith has been a Republican representative for the last 6 years, but I can tell it's still a Democratic district because, not because of voter registration, but because Biden won it by however many points in 2020 and similarly in 2016. So I think voter registration, like if you plotted out for every district in the state, what percentage of registered Democrats there were versus like how much the Democrat got in the last election, it's going to correlate pretty strongly. Though obviously it's not a one for one because there's plenty of Democrats to vote for Republicans, plenty of Republicans to vote for Democrats, and individual registered independents tend to be pretty consistent, but the overall percentage of how many go Republican versus Democrat tends to fluctuate based on the area that you're in. Something is useless. I just don't think it's. I would rather just bring it, like, just say, like, how much Biden wanted to buy.
Yeah, or I, you know, I'm saying sort of useless in the sense that they're trying to add context. There's other ways to add context to these news stories than like,
just like raw data.
It doesn't mean what they're. I don't think the con. Sometimes I don't think while all of the numbers are correct, I think sometimes the context is where you get like, you know, just you pick these variables and you say these are the ones that are indicative and you just throw them in there and that's the context. I mean, I don't know. I'm still not really buying it. I actually
I mean, if the variable is indicative, though, I feel like that's helpful context.
Well, maybe now's a good time to sort of get into it and we can do a little strategy session here for the people. I mentioned this, I think, to Jake Owens, and it goes into like the Michael Katz card that you left too, Bill. After the general election, I want to have somebody in here with like a sort of completely different sort of idea. I was talking about Mike Ramone originally being like, hey, I heard him saying like the Republican Party is the third party or not a major party in Delaware anymore or whatever. I'd like to talk to him about that. He probably wouldn't do it because I know that he knows me and he thinks, I don't know, he just doesn't have the time. He's made all the money he can off his position and now he can go do whatever he wants. But there are other people that might be interested, like a Michael Katz, like a Brian Shoup. I wonder if there's somebody out there that you guys think would do it and would be an interesting sort of somebody interesting to talk to about like what it is that they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious choice is another gent with a podcast, but I don't think he's got the time for it right now.
No, certainly not right now. Maybe after the election, he'll have a lot more time, hopefully.
That's right. That would be a crossover episode.
That'd be fun. I do think Mike Katz would be fun though, because he is very earnest in a way that I think a lot of the Republicans aren't necessarily. And he has an interesting story in terms of being a state senator and then getting beat by Greg Lavelle and then running for president and get wandering up in New Hampshire for a while and then coming back and now he's an independent. I think it could be good.
So he got beat by Greg when he got beat by Greg Lavelle.
Yeah, back in 2012.
Was he a
He's
Democrat?
a Democrat.
Okay, so he was just like, and what, he's a medical doctor.
Yes. He's a physician, business owner, problem solver, servant leader. He refuses all donations.
Sleeper in car in New Hampshire.
He refuses all donations. I mean, good for him. I guess, I mean, on one hand, if he's like an ex-Democrat who is sort of soured on that and then just wants to be completely independent and it's like refusing all donations, and it's like that, I mean, on one hand, I kind of get that, but to what end?
To solve
Like,
problems.
yeah, with him by himself?
I did see a Facebook comment from him the other day because he's starting to run Facebook ads. And so someone was asking, like, well, what are you actually going to do? Like, if you get elected to the Senate, are you going to be caucusing with the Democrats or the Republicans? Which is like a very reasonable question to ask somebody who's running for Senate. And he said, actually, no, if I get in, I'm going to create a new caucus, like an independent caucus. And I'm going to take some of the existing Democrats and some of the existing Republicans, and we're going to have our new caucus, which is going to be the independent caucus. And the person replied and gave the correct answer, which is like, well, but like if neither side has the majority, you have to caucus with one side in order to choose leadership, in order to like to do a whole bunch of stuff, you need to have a majority. Every country, even multi-party systems, have some majority governing coalition. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. That's his plan.
Yeah, so he's going to solve these problems by himself with
As
no
an independent,
mechanism for.
no party, just
Right.
like some problem solvers coming together and solving
No.
problems.
Things have gotten
But
too
here's the other
crazy on the
problem.
left and the right.
Yeah. We
You
need
know what
some
the first
moderate
problem he needs to
voices.
solve is? You know what the first problem he needs to solve is? Of the 40 some representatives and senators who are going to be serving, of those folks, how many of them would want to do that? And I think the answer is zero.
He did not give any names.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he does know. Maybe he knows that people would join. I mean, ultimately, it's not the worst idea I've ever heard. But
It's
like,
up there.
it is up there. But you would think that there would be, if you're trying to take from here and take from there and take from there and to create a new thing, but all of those different places you could take from have either never heard of you, ignore you, or are not interested. Like that's the thing I don't understand is, and we had the same, this came up with Jake, I think. It's like, here's the issue. People aren't interested in that. Like you have come up with this idea. Nobody cares. It's sort of like the woman who got beat for, was it US rep, the Republican woman? I forget her name now.
Whiskey.
No. She had, Jake said she had been involved in all of the stuff for 2 years and she was going to be a black
Oh,
woman who was going to
Danielle
be run as a
Hall.
Republican. Danielle Hall, that's right. And then she just got beat by some no-name, just ex-cop white guy. I guess. I don't even really know anything about it. Doesn't matter. Who cares? But yeah, that was my point to him. It's just like, Nobody wants that. No one's asking for it, and nobody cares about that.
Well,
Like, what?
the thing I appreciate about my cats, and the reason I would honestly like to have him in to talk, is because he is doing more than anybody else I have seen take this line, which is it's a very common line among like political elites, which is that there's too much division. I remember when I was in college, which is not that long ago, but it's like my period of being in college lined up basically perfectly with the Trump administration. And I was in, there was this big sort of elite panic in the wake of 2016 because Trump had won, and then also because Bernie Sanders had done so well about populism and just the effects of populism, right wing and left wing. They sort of lumped them together into this sort of a single thing. And so there's a bunch of political scientists that were trying to square the circle of like, how do you combine Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump together? And so you've seen this. This is like the whole idea with like the Atlantic. This is the whole idea with sort of the quote unquote liberal establishment.
Hillbilly elegy.
Yeah. There's this whole idea that, like, yes, the right has gone crazy and the left has gone crazy, and we need to come together. As you know, it's sort of the elite consensus. And he is the first person I've seen actually be like, well, and that means I'm just actually going to run as an independent, and I'm going to run, by all accounts, a real campaign. Like, his signs are up everywhere. He's running ads. He goes to all the events. He was at the UD football game, he's putting in the work. Like, I don't think he's going to win or even do particularly well, but it's interesting that he's trying to instrumentalize that in a way that I've not really seen anybody else do, at least in Delaware.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, but do we know what his sort of like, if you gave him a problem, like a general problem that people talk about
How would
in
he solve it?
Delaware, how, like, what, yeah, like, so, and I only ask that to kind of suss out, like, is he running in your, like, in your example, is he running as I'm going to be sort of the neoliberal consensus, but I have to do that as an independent because the Democrats have gone too far left and the Republicans have gone too far right. Or does he have some other sort of harebrained ideas like a libertarian would have or something like that? Like, where is he coming at this from, to, like, in his mind, like, what is his politics?
Let's see. So I'm reading off his site. Economy, jobs, cost of living is his top issue. A strong and resilient economy is vital to improving the standard of living for all Americans. Rising inflation and increasing costs have made it difficult for many to save, retire, and maintain their purchasing power. With my extensive experience in economics and business, I know how to rebuild an economy that works for everybody. By investing in education and workforce development, introducing tax reforms that spur economic growth, reducing the
That
corporate
means
tax
lower
burden,
taxes for the wealthy, by the way.
Reducing the corporate tax burden, incentivizing business investment, and achieving energy independence, we can create lasting economic growth. So,
Or whom?
that could be on, that could literally be on
The
like
economy.
a Buccini Pollin pamphlet. It's like, yeah, we're so okay. So that answers one question. He is trying to he's trying to call himself the only sort of neoliberal consensus maker that there is,
Basically.
because that's just all pablum. That's all just
It's
like, and that's the
like
other
a
thing too, is like,
90s, it's like a Clinton era, it's like a DLC Democrat, essentially, is what he wants.
well, it sounds like there's like more nuance with this particular candidate. But it also, I mean, could you just say like fiscally conservative, socially liberal?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah,
I
that
don't know
part.
how socially liberal he is, but
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, Dr. Michael Katz, come on the podcast.
Sure.
Tell us what you're up to after you
Let's
get smoked in the election. But again,
debate
that doesn't
fiscal
matter.
responsibility. We'll take the anti side.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, is like, I can tell you why the things that you just said won't work. And I love this, like, I was a businessman. That sounds very Trumpian.
He does have a section on LBR money, and it just has a link to a bunch of just like her donation reports, but it doesn't say
Ooh, did some of it
why
come
it's
from a
good or
pack?
bad. And it just says also that she has a personal wealth of over $10 million, which I do not think is true. Because you know how you go look up those sites where you look up like X person net
Yes.
worth and it's like $20 million and
Carl
they're like a
Stomberg net
YouTuber.
worth, and it just like looks at all the articles that have been written about you lately.
Yeah, I think, again, I think people are just too high on their own supply. Like, nobody wants this. There's nothing, like, nothing in what you read is exciting or new. It's like, I'm a businessman, so I know how to make business good, and that helps everybody. Gee, I've never fucking heard that before in my life. Neither of the two parties have anyone like that. What's he saying that's different than what, you know? And that's the thing too. This is maybe a good way to wrap this end part of it up, and then we'll get to some other stuff. But like this idea that everybody's radical and they can't work with each other anymore. And like, I got news for you. If you look at the Delaware General Assembly, it's basically a moderate Democratic body. There's really not that much dissent. The Republicans, the ones that even that are a little bit, you know, out of line, have zero power. And even the politicians that I like on the left, aren't exactly like as radical as I would like them. And there's about three of them. So like this whole story that everybody keeps telling about, like, everybody's at each other's throats, we can't get anything done. Well, we couldn't get anything done 15 years ago because of the Delaware way. It has nothing to do with any of this. I don't know. Do you guys think that this is I don't know. The story has caught on, I guess, because of Trump. Like, I guess at the national level, it caught on, but like, I don't even
I
buy
mean, you
like
could
the
say it started with Trump. You could say it started with the Tea Party. You could say it started with Occupy Wall Street. You could say it started with Gingrich. You could say it started with Reagan. You could say it started with the New Left. You could say it started with Barry Goldwater. You could say it started with fucking what's his name? McCarthy. You could say it started with anybody. Like, yeah, there's always been division in politics. There's been a trend in the since the 1990s especially where the parties have ideologically sorted more in the sense that there's not really that many more. And this is true, that there's not that many Republicans that are to the left of even your rightmost Democrat. And there's not many Democrats that are to the right of your leftmost Republican. Obviously, it varies from state to state, especially in like some of the southern states. But there is a truth that like the parties have gotten more ideologically divided. And in that sense, there is more division. But there hasn't been any sort of fundamental shift in terms of polarization in any broader sense. Like, we've always been at each other's throats to the extent that we are now.
I think that's perfectly put. I think, and it really describes, I think, what Mike Katz is trying to do. It's like, you know, we used to have this, we used to have this overlap, you know, and guys like Joe Manchin and Mitt Romney could fucking sit down. And I'm like, but yeah, the reason the nobody wants that.
But yeah, we're going back to the era of like Strom Thurmond is what
Well,
you mean
this is
by that.
kind of what the Harris campaign is doing right now, isn't it? It's like we're bringing up all the great Republicans from the early aughts. So maybe this is popular now, Rob.
Well, I guess we'll see. I mean, I think it is a little weird to be like, oh, Dick Cheney and Alberto Gonzalez. Like, I'm old enough to remember dum-dums. It's like you say not to quote normalize, like Trump, don't normalize this, don't normalize torture. Oh, but Dick Cheney endorsed me. How about that? Isn't that great? Like, my hot take on that is that it doesn't do anything. Like, I don't think there's anybody out there that like didn't know what they were going to do and be like, oh, well. And maybe Mike Katz. Maybe Mike Katz is like, oh, Dick
Yeah, that
Cheney
one might.
endorsed Kamala. I'll vote for Kamala. Like the one guy who's doing the thing. Maybe that's for that person, that one person. So yeah. I mean, I think they're just interesting. All of this stuff is just kind of interesting because it's so on the margins, and but there's nothing else to sort of. People want that overlap, so they just like focus on these things that like two or three people are talking about. The only thing that touting this Cheney endorsement does is just make everybody who was mad madder, make everybody who was gonna, swallow hard and vote for Harris no matter what anyway. They're just like, oh, another thing I gotta fucking swallow, they're just gonna do that. Like, was there an undecided? It was like leaning Trump, and now it's like on for Harris Waltz
Well,
because.
I've seen this, and you actually do hear it at the door as well. Well, there is this broad sense that like things are getting too hot, or we're too divided. Like that is actually a fairly common viewpoint. But the issue is that there's no real way to actually materially address that in any reasonable way in, like, certainly the media ecosystem that we're in. Like, not to say this in a good or a bad way, but, like, Joe Biden did pass the largest bipartisan, like, bill in probably 30 years or something. And it was actually, like, a generally positive bill with the first infrastructure bill. It obviously didn't do a bunch of stuff that it should have done, and that's why the Inflation Reduction Act passed later. But like, that was like a huge piece of bipartisan legislation that people had been talking about doing forever. And like, who the fuck remembers that other than kind of the unions? And so I saw a tweet that I felt like kind of summed up my position on it, which is that the Harris campaign has sort of seen that there is like a group of undecideds that do feel that Harris is too liberal, and really the reason for that is because she's a black woman from San Francisco. But they misdiagnosed that to be like, oh, we need to move to the right and like address all these, like get all these Republicans on board, which then actually makes her real weakness a bigger issue, which her real weakness is that nobody thinks that she believes anything. And they think that she's like wishy-washy and is not actually going to commit to anything, which is another thing that I've heard from, like, you know, if you're talking to like regular swing type voters, that is a pretty common conception of her, is that she's just goes wherever the wind blowing, which there's like a broad sense that there is division. And I think this is like the Mike Katz thing. I'm interested to see where this guy who's literally only running on like there's too much division, I'm an independent, I'm not going to be divided. There is this broad sense that is like, I would say probably majority of Americans think that that is true. Based on my conversations, based on like the polling around that stuff. But I just think that even if a lot of people believe it, it is so low on the actual list of things that people vote on that I think Mike Katz, for me, the over-under is 5%. If he gets over 5%, that's impressive. If he gets under 5%, that's just another independent.
So what the hell else is going on there? Anything? Have I missed anything in a week?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. Ugh. I am very excited to continue talking about this sort of police oversight work, and I just want to reiterate two things before we sign off. Number one is to stay with the program over the next couple of weeks, because there's going to be more information from more people about sort of the direction we're going in and how to get involved. Just have your voice heard. So. There's going to be sessions over the next probably 4 weeks or so, just so you can, you know, if you have an idea, if you want to get involved in some fashion, if you want to meet people who are doing this kind of work and organizing this kind of stuff on the police reform side, there's going to be a lot of information coming up about neighbors organizing for credibility and accountability in police. And that's no cap, folks. That's no cap, Delaware. The last thing I want to say is that, Carl and Bill are in the studio right now engineering all of this. I'm in a hotel room in fucking Tucson, Arizona, just to give you guys, you know, some content for the week, because I know people, they like it, you know, they dig it and they want to hear what's going on. So, you know, what you could do is you could go on patreon.com/thehighlandsbunker and you could just click on $5 a month. You know, and just ride that out for a little while. You know, it feels good to support the team. You know, we got lots of stuff cooking. We're going to need people's help on many, many facets of this project. And unlike Dr. Michael Katz, I do take donations. So get in there, get on patreon.com, tell your friends, and help us out. So thank you. Bill and Carl, thank you so much for getting this all set up. Yeah, I'm happy to be able to do this. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's great to chat. Thanks for having us.
It was weird. It was weird seeing you guys on Zoom in my studio, man. I was like, what the hell's going on in there?
Yeah, this is admittedly weird. We're digging it though. Nurse Susan has been wonderfully accommodating.
Oh, she is wonderfully accommodating. I gotta say, she's very nice about it. She knew you guys were coming. She's like, oh no, that's cool. It doesn't matter. Yeah, she's very laid back about these things. Well, till next week, folks. Left is best.